Teach a man to fish, and he eats well. This is the thought for today. Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California. Teach a man to fish, and he eats well. This is a truism that has come down through history, and it is a very profound truism that repeats itself again and again and again. And it is like the wheel. It is like the wheel. People feel they have to reinvent it all the time. People feel they have to reinvent the idea of teaching a man to fish so that he will eat well. We go to our third world countries from the United States here, and we take them tons of grain, tons of our surplus foods and so forth, which they have no use for. And we give it to them in such a wonderful way, and we expect a gratuitous feeling from them. Well, we'll never get it. Now, why won't we get it? Because they don't get it. Their government gets it and sells it to them. So they think that the Americans are sending them things that they have to buy, that they have to pay for. And truly, they do have to pay for it one way or the other. But when we send our Peace Corps to Europe, and we send our Peace Corps to the third world countries and all around the world, what happens? The Peace Corps people are trained to teach people how to live in better sanitation, to live in better housing, to live with a better education, and things like that. Unfortunately, we're teaching the wrong thing. We're teaching the wrong thing. It's just like if I were to say to a man in his wheelchair, okay, and his one arm is crippled and the other arm is shorter than the other, and his legs are not cooperative, and I say to him, we're going to see you whole and perfect and see you being a sculptor like Michelangelo and create great things. Well, we're looking at the top of the ladder instead of where he is. And he will say, huh, what a bunch of idiots. And he won't do anything. However, if we say to him, hey, look at this guy over here. He's in a wheelchair too. And he's got the same situation you have, and he's making his chair go by himself. He doesn't have somebody else help him. He's got this one arm there, you know, making it go. And his other leg that works, he's having it to direct the wheelchair so he can go ahead without having somebody push him around all the time. So he's got a little independence. And the other guy said, yeah, he can do it, I can do it. Yeah. And so then you keep bringing other examples to them of improving themselves and going on and on and on. And that's the wonder. That's the teaching them to do this statement here. You can teach a student a lesson for a day. But if you teach him to learn by creating curiosity, he will continue the learning process as long as he lives. Beautiful statement. You can teach a student to learn a lesson for a day, but if you teach him to learn by creating curiosity, he will continue the learning process as long as he lives. This was Clay Bedford said. Now, what does that mean? Who else do you know that was this kind of a teacher? Besides me, of course. But who else do you know that was that kind of teacher? Socrates. Yeah. Socrates taught his students how to think. He taught his students how to use their mind, not just by what he hears other people say, but by what he feels inside of himself about whatever he's listening to. And Socrates told the young people who were studying with him to think about what they had heard, and they naturally brought to Socrates the business of the parliament that their parents were in and so forth, and they say, well, today they're discussing the idea that we should plant trees all over the countryside because it'll make it green again, because we've chopped down all the trees and building houses and what have you. And so Socrates says, well, that's interesting. Why do we want to plant trees? Not just because the parliament says we should do it, but Why? But if the parliament says you should do it, then you should do it because that's your government. No, but think about it. Why do you want to plant trees? Well, trees would make the land green, but if you plant trees all over, then you have no place to grow crops. If you plant trees where they're growing crops now, they can't grow the crops that we need to have for food. Well, yeah, well, we import it. True, you can import it, but what if you tell the people from where you're importing, they too should plant trees, you know, which is what you do. What what would you do then? How would you handle that? Well, that's a good thought too. Okay, so one of the big problems we have with trees are the trees that grow the fastest have the deepest, longest spreading, outspreading roots. And these roots get into the sewer tanks, into the septic tanks. They get into the sewer lines that go from the houses to the septic tanks, or if they have such a thing, you know. And if they have the running water, the aqueducts and things like that. Well, what destroys the aqueducts in areas of vegetation? Trees, plants. What destroys the Yucatan? What destroys all of these ancient structures that are down there, you know, the Mayan temples and what have you? Trees. Trees grow in there and the roots go in there and tear apart all of the beautiful work that was done by the natives. It's a returning to its original nature, you know. So, well, yeah, I can see where that would happen. Now, what might be a better way of clearing up the ecology of the land? Well, in the cities we have smelters where we melt metal to make our iron swords and our shields and things like that. And we're burning this peat moss, this peat, and this peat, it makes smoke all over the city. And there's a layer of smoke all over the city and the people are hacking all the time because of the peat smoke. Perhaps we should find another place, another substance to burn that doesn't do that, or move these places that make the swords and stuff out of the city, out into another district where they won't bother the city. Well, these people have a right to be in the city. Yeah, okay. They have a right to burn what they got available. Oh, it's okay. Where would anything other than peat exist? Well, I understand there's coal in certain areas, and we have some right here in our world. Oh, what is coal? You know, because they didn't use it much. They didn't need it for their homes because it wasn't that cold, and they didn't have furnaces and other things. All they did was heat water for their baths and things like that. So you see, Socrates was teaching these people to think. He was teaching them not just to take the status quo, to take the information that was given to them by their forefathers, forefathers, forefathers. Somebody had to think about it in the first place. And their forefathers thought, hey, peat, hey, great, we got something there. But they did not foresee how many peat-burning ovens were going to be in the city, making all of that pollution in the air. And so what happened? No swords? No, we got to have the swords. You know, no plowshares, you know? No, we got to have those things. And so what wins out? Well, what is needed, the necessity, wins out over what is beneficial. Unless you have someone come along and using their creativity, using their natural creativity, because they've been taught to think, and as they use their natural creativity, they come up with ideas that are so fantastic, are so glorious, that no one ever dreamed of it. Now, we say to you today that in 20 years, 30 years at most, our railroad cars, if we have such, will not need wheels. They will float above the ground on a magnetic current that will carry them swiftly, smoothly, right where they want to go. And the other details that will be worked out, but that concept, that concept is there. Now, they're working on it now. Popular Science has many articles on it. Scientific American has articles on it. Discovery has articles on it. Smithsonian has articles on it. They all have beautiful articles on working with magnetic energy and how magnetic energy is so free of any pollution, how magnetic energy is self-replicating of itself. It's self-duplicating, it's self-building of itself. It doesn't deplete itself. It's a fantastic thing. And by using it, it generates more. It generates even a greater power. That's not bad, you know. Wouldn't be something if you used gasoline and made more gasoline in the tank. Wow, that'd be super. And that can be done too. But you see, they have the technique now of using water in the gas tank to run the car. And we might call it hydrogen, but hydrogen is a makeup of water. And what is the output of hydrogen burning cars? Water. The only emission is moisture. Now, who would have ever thought such a thing years ago? Now, Leonardo da Vinci was an idiot. He designed a helicopter. He designed the deep sea diving bell. He designed all sorts of things, but he didn't design the technique to operate it. He didn't design the engine and the gasoline and the oil and the parts and the tool shops and stuff like that, but that wasn't his part. His part was to dream and to give guts to the dream, to give wheels to the dream, to give essence to the dream. This is what happens by the creative people around him. You know, most people don't dream outlandish dreams because they think of themselves as being very foolish. Now, there is an effort going on to forestate the Sahara Desert. You know where the Sahara Desert is? You know, the Sahara Desert blows billions and billions and billions and billions, and untold billions, trillions of tons of sand into the ocean every year. Really, you wonder where it all comes from. It blows in from the other side. But they have started forestating the edges of the Sahara. And they have found, not deep below the surface, but quite near the surface, water. And they have found that it could be done. But you see, that's a marvelous project, and it's a simple project. It's a project that'd be easily done, which would bring changes to the whole world, because the Sahara Desert was at one time a great forest, according to the logs that are found buried underneath it and so forth. We have easier projects. We have the project of reforestating areas like Canada, where there's lots of moisture, of our western United States, where dry farming exists, where why not grow some trees? And what happens when you grow trees? It attracts moisture. The trees themselves just bring moisture with them. They attract it. They redesign the ecology of the sky and the ground and everything else. It's amazing what they do. And we don't have to do all the work. All we have to do is just dream and then put our dreams in motion. And there again, teach a man to fish and he eats well. Teach a man to dream, to follow his inner imagination, to listen to the divine within him, to listen to that utterly stupid, crazy, outlandish idea that comes to his inner mind and say, well, if I can think it, maybe there's a way to do it. Wouldn't that be interesting? Wouldn't that be interesting? Remember how crazy they thought humanity was to fly without an airplane? Well, they've got these jet-propelled packs on your back that move you up and down. They have things that you stand on, and now here's that two-wheeled bicycle or scooter with the wheels side by side. You wonder how it's going to stay up. But you, I will ask you a question. Anyone know how the scooter stays up? Tell me quickly before you do a lot of negative thinking.
Gyroscopes.
I'm sorry?
Gyroscopes.
Yeah, see, he knows the answer. What did he say?
I couldn't understand it.
He said gyroscope. A gyroscope is that which maintains its balance wherever it is under any circumstances. What is it that allows a compass to be a compass in the tough ocean waters and in the calm ocean waters or whatever? A gyroscope. A gyroscope maintains a level balance. Now, there are great gyroscopes. Do you know what the world is? The world is a gyroscope. It is spinning in space. It is maintaining its position as it goes around the sun, as it goes around all the other planets, and as it weaves its beautiful path throughout all time and space. It's wonderful, but it's a gyroscope. And out there are all those other gyroscopes. They've always been there. How long did it take us to realize it? And do we still even realize it? Had you thought about that? Had you thought that, you know what a gyroscope is? It's got a little pin up the middle, you know, and it's just spinning around, and it's always level wherever it's positioning itself. Well, that's what the planets are, and that's what the sun is. And that's what the sun is around all the other aspects of the universe, all in the Milky Way and in all the other galaxies and what have you. But you see, we're just here it is, one of the essential physics aspects of the world. One of the essential physics aspects of the world, and we are just coming aware of it now, you know? And here in humanity is what? Humanity, our bodies are loaded with tiny gyroscopes. That's why we can walk upright. And how can an animal walk down, you know, with his head out like this here? The same thing with the gyroscopes. Now, you say, well, Herb, we haven't read about that in the physics books yet. That's true, you haven't. You will. You will. There's a lot of things. You didn't read about diving bells and helicopters in Leonardo da Vinci's time either. And he didn't even know what it meant when you looked at the picture. That's an interesting looking gadget, you know. What is that all about? And so what is it? What is it? Could you evolve an idea as beautiful and wonderful as this? It took Michelangelo 4 years, that four numbered years. He might have started in the middle and ended in the middle of a year, but approximately 3 to 4 years to do what? To paint the Sistine Chapel. 4 years. Unbelievable. Unbelievable that he could take such imagination in such diversity and put it there on that tableau and bring it forth in that magnificent way. 4 years. 4 years to write the theology of the Bible on the ceiling. 4 years to not create objections from the theologians of his time to what he did. 4 years to magistrate and orchestrate such a colossal experience. Imagine that. Imagine that. And we have trouble with learning. Could you and must you say that Michelangelo was brilliant and in tune? My, yes. He was not a klutz like they tried to point him out to be. And they also tried to point out Mozart to be a klutz, you know, chasing the girls around and doing things like that. He's brilliant. You don't even see those things. Somebody saw those things because it offended them, and they wrote it down. You follow me? Whereas, who knows? Mozart might have been saying to the young girl, I'm here to teach you how to play the piano. Now sit down at the piano. And he had to chase her, you know, or whatever. But we don't know. But right away, we try to put it in our limited viewpoint. And we want to put it in our expanded viewpoint, in our awareness on the broadest, most magnificent aspect of the plane. Ellen, what dream profoundly are you going to reveal through your divine awareness because you're innocent? Ingeborg, what are you going to let the world see that it had never seen before by any other aspect of life because you're going to give it the visibility? Sylvia, what attitude are you going to turn on in the universe that they've been waiting for all their life, just because you're going to live it so beautifully that they'll see it can be done. And you, Paul Lalego, what are you going to do? What are you going to do with your life? How are you going to reveal yourself? There's no rush. There's no urgency. There's like Anita dashing around the New Zealand forest naked, having a ball, diving into the water of the pools like Jane and Tarzan, just having a ball. What is she doing? She is showing that the only thing in life to fear is fear itself. She is showing that joy, harmony, peace, love, delight in living is what it's all about. Is that what you're going to show? Sounds good, doesn't it? Yes, it does sound good, and you're all wonderful. Teach a man to fish and he eats well. You can teach a student a lesson for a day, but if you can teach him to learn by creating curiosity, he will continue the learning process for as long as he lives. And isn't that a fun thing to involve ourselves in? I love you.
I love you.